This is a production of Cornell University.
February 23rd, 2009, GPSA meeting.
Okay, we're going to bring the meeting to order at 5:33. Thanks to everybody for coming. And we're going to, as I've said in several emails, we've got a pretty tight agenda, so we're going to just start rolling. And I'd like to welcome President Skorton and Vice President Murphy to our meeting. So for open forum, this is your time to bring up anything that's not on the agenda already. So please bring up anything of concern or anything to announce. But also, if you have any questions or comments for President Skorton or Vice President Murphy, this is the time to bring those up. So I think I'll go ahead and allow President Skorton to say some words, because I'm sure that he'll have some things to present, and maybe that'll start our discussion.
Thanks for having me. Good to be with you. I was just thinking, listening to that thing before, that it's like a metaphor for graduate school. It's intrusive, it's painful, you don't know how long it's going to last, right? And then eventually it ends. It's the last part you're not sure about, but it will eventually end. So thanks for having us here today. I've been spending most of my time working on one aspect or another of a financial situation, either substantive work on trying to understand the depths of it, planning work on developing scenarios for what it will be like to manage the university through a period of uncertainty in terms of funding, and a lot of time just communicating about whatever stage we're at. And I thought I would just share a couple of real quick summary comments, and then we can talk about whatever you want. It doesn't have to be about the finances. As a lot of you probably know, we're facing about a $200 million a year shortfall on the ESPA campus out of a budget of $2 billion. And so we're working on a 10% correction, some of it in budget cuts and some of it in revenue enhancement and some of it in changing the way we do things to try to save money in doing the same, achieving the same goals that we're trying to achieve. This is happening all over higher education. And if you haven't had a chance to read some of this stuff, which is very sobering, Harvard is not hiring faculty now. They've slowed down construction projects. A lot of things like that are happening. Many of the schools, like we, are not giving raises. There's all kinds of responses around the community of universities and how to deal with this. Cornell falls somewhere between the big state schools that have much smaller endowments and much larger student bodies, and therefore are less dependent on endowment earnings than schools with small student bodies and huge endowments like Princeton or Harvard, where maybe 40 or 45 cents on the dollar spent to operate the place comes from endowment earnings. At Cornell, it's 11 cents on the dollar of our operating funds come from endowment earnings. And so we have real issues here, and there's very substantial issues. One of the big issues is to decide how to finance our way through the period where the market is down. Eventually, the markets will come back up, and much of these funds will be regrown. But we're going to have at least two and probably three difficult years on campus. The responses to the situation have been cutting budgets, as many of you know about, giving no raises. The only two exceptions to that are there will be an increase in graduate student stipends of 3.3%, as I'm sure you know. And staff members who earn $40,000 or less are going to get a one-time bonus. We've set up an employee assistance fund to help folks who are of lesser means and are having trouble, which there'll be people of plenty on campus who fit that description. We are cutting budgets in general 5%. My office and the provost's office are going to be cut 10%, and some of the other offices will be cut a bit more than 5, but overall 5. We are also drawing on reserves, by which I mean uncommitted balances and funds that are used by various units of the university for various things, and we're taking. Over the course of 18 months, we're taking $150 million out of those reserves. and then we're working on a variety of other ideas to finance the university. On the revenue side, I had a hard decision about tuition. Eventually decided to raise endowed undergraduate tuition 4%, which is still a substantial raise, but the lowest raise in 42 years. And most of our peer institutions have followed something like that. They're raising it 3%, 3.5%. And we're also discussing the overall size of the student body, both undergraduate, graduate, and professional, since tuition is 36% of the overall operating funds of the university. And obviously, any decisions about increasing the size of student number of students in any program has to be done with a very, very careful thought as to the effect on education and student experience. Vice President Murphy and Deputy Provost Harris are going to be co-chairing the group. I don't know if it's actually met yet, or just getting going next month in March, to look at whether it's feasible to actually slightly increase the size of the student body, either undergraduate, graduate, or professional, or not. And they'll do that in a transparent way, and students will be a part of the conversation as well before any decisions are made. And in any case, there won't be huge room to do that anyway. It may be a little bit of a change on the margin inside the student body. The most difficult thing right now throughout the schools that have big endowments is that almost all these schools have slowed down faculty hiring. Some of the peer schools have actually frozen hires. We haven't done that. We do have faculty recruitments going on all over the university, but many fewer than we thought we would have. So that hurts in two ways. It hurts us in terms of the workload of the faculty, and it hurts graduate students finishing their programs and postdocs throughout the country who are looking for employment. And since searches are being slowed down or stopped ubiquitously around the country, it makes the job market even tougher for graduate students and for postdocs. So that's the long short of it right now. I'm going to do my best to be as open and informative as I can, and trying to send a message out to the campus every 4 to 6 or so weeks, an email that I hope you've seen some of them anyway. And that's it. I'm glad to answer questions, and we'll work our way through this, but it's going to be a couple of difficult years.
Do you have any questions?
Or about anything. It doesn't have to be about finances. Yeah.
Will the graduate school still be funding the campus bus reimbursement ticket for graduate students traveling to Ohio?
As far as I know, but frankly, we haven't seen the budget reduction proposals yet. Those are due to the provost and president next Monday. So I think it'll be next week when the president and the provost will see. I haven't heard from the dean of the graduate school that that's an area that she's targeted.
Once
those
are done,
frankly,
out of the funding for the research faculty.
Yeah.
Right. It's not actually going to be a graduate school fund. So, you know, we can have say on that.
Yeah.
I have two questions. Prior to that economic downturn, it seemed like there was a lot of concern in Cornell about the aging faculty and the need for hiring a lot of new people because of aging group that needs to retire. What's happening with that thinking as a result? And secondly, the two-year rebound seems kind of optimistic. What's your worst case? Suppose these reserve funds and things are an ongoing economic situation.
Let me do the second one first. Obviously, that's very conjectural. We have quite a pessimistic planning horizon. We're projecting even more severe losses in the endowment throughout this year. We're modeling another negative year next year all the way through the next fiscal year, so negative returns for the next 18 months. Almost nobody, even the most pessimistic economists, are projecting continuing market drop for that period, but we are. So I think that we're taking very, very conservative. That's part of the reason that the budget cuts are so draconian, is that we're modeling very, very pessimistic. On the reserves, we're trying to be extremely careful with the reserves that we take from the units. We're taking $1.03 of the reserves that the provost and I have, and a much smaller amount, like 6%, something like that, of what the units have, because those are funds in general, uncommitted fund balances that are not just slush funds. They were developed for certain purposes. That's a well that we could go back to if we had to, but it would be nice not to do that. What some of our peer institutions are doing, we're thinking about, is whether it makes sense to borrow more money to get through this against the university's balance sheet. And you may have read in the papers that between Harvard and Princeton, in the aggregate, those two schools have sold $2.5 billion of taxable bonds. People on the market thinking that these institutions are going to be there, that they're high quality funds, and that they're taking a chance, and they're doing that to develop funds to use rather than draining endowments farther, so that when the markets do recur, the endowments will grow. And we're exploring now, like everybody else is, who has an endowment. We haven't decided whether to do that or not. So if we did that, then we'd have some working capital that would also help buffer it. But we're planning that, I'm planning that the next 2 years are going to be very rough, and then after that it's going to become a little bit easier because of the things that we're doing in that regard. Remind me of your first question. See, I'm getting a little bit. So right now nobody's retiring unless they really absolutely have to, because everybody's retirement fund is down so severely. But we will surely have a huge wave of retirements within a few years, and it's just a matter of when it'll start. People in my generation and beyond are definitely not going to be doing the same level of full-time work 10 years from now that we're doing now. And so we will have churn in the market again. Graduate students will be hired. Postdocs will be hired. The fact that the stimulus package has a very substantial money for the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, even some help for the National Endowment for the Humanities, which is miraculous. I mean, given some of us have been fighting that battle for 104th Congress, means that there will be some more lubrication in the system for labs or for projects that then can be translated into positions for junior faculty and postdocs and grad students. We'll have a prolongation of the sort of slope, the slowing of the slope of that wave climbing up, I'm sure, because of the retirement issues. Many schools are giving incentives for people to retire, especially staff members to retire, and we'll see whether that makes sense in this setting as well in the near future. But the most troublesome part of all of this is on the staff side, we will surely have layoffs in the university. And what we're doing is working very, very hard to minimize that, pulling that lever. And in an institution like this, where we depend so much on teamwork between faculty and staff to get everything done, we're spending more time working on that issue than the other one. But we will have a smaller workforce, I'm sure. We already have a smaller workforce, very slightly in some areas that have been affected by state funding, the contract colleges. And I'm sure that we'll have, as a result of slowing down faculty searches, and some job loss, and some retirements, and attrition on the staff side, I'm sure we'll have a smaller workforce overall here. And that will dictate that when it's possible, we will have to hire to keep up all the things we're doing. Oh, I'm sorry, definitely. We're just going down. No. Corporate philanthropy is usually a fairly small proportion of the philanthropy that schools like ours see. I can summarize all of it by telling you that three pieces of data. One is that the annual fund, those are funds that people give each year that were put right into cash flow to help that year, have not shown a decrease yet at Cornell. I imagine we will eventually see decrease, but we haven't so far, which is astonishing. It's flat. Secondly, our fulfillment of prior pledges, and those have been coming in very, very much as expected, which is also astonishing. It shows the loyalty of people and also the fact that they perhaps planned for those pledges to be paid. I wouldn't be surprised if some of that went down, but so far the fulfillment of pledges has been surprisingly robust. The third is new commitments, and they're way down everywhere, and they're down at Cornell as well. And it's only reasonable to expect that that's the case. And I'm spending less time than I was a year ago meeting with alumni around the country, because it's almost intrusive, it's almost insulting to really push hard on people right now for fun raising because everybody, it's a generality, everybody's suffering in this economic climate. But I am doing some traveling to meet with alumni. Just was in Florida for 3 days where we have a meeting of the investment committee. People come and see how we're handling the endowment because they are investing in the endowment. And meeting with a lot of individual alumni. And the week before, I was doing the same thing, and I'm doing some 2 weeks from now. And in general, people are still keeping us in their plans. And the thing about Cornell is it's traditionally, by which I mean, say, the last 15, 20 years, among the most successful philanthropic programs in the United States. Last year, we were sixth in the country and fourth in the Ivy League, which is huge. And no school has ever reached $4 billion in campaign ever in the history of higher education. We're at $2.5 billion. And there's only three schools trying to do four: Stanford, Columbia, and Cornell. And Stanford's close. Columbia's a little bit ahead of where we are, and we're at $2.5 billion. So long term, I'm very, very confident about philanthropy. When we have events that advertise and I'm coming to talk to people, it's a good sign. If people don't want to hear about it, they just don't come and go over their feet. We've had record numbers of people coming to the events. The investment committee meeting we just had was the largest turnout we've had in recent memory. And we had a so-called President's Circle event, which honors people who give at a certain level. We had it at the United Nations. It was twice as big as the turnout last year, twice as big. So we're getting a lot of support, both financially and emotionally, from the community. But the new pledges, new commitments are down, and I think are going to be down. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I just want to just a question.
Yeah.
I was wondering, I heard from faculty that they said, you know, I mean, all these staff people have to go, that they might see that they got back in position, and that they said they would actually be having to forego part of that salary just to do that, just let go and say,
yeah.
I was wondering whether the university would be such a faculty.
Yeah. So the first thing I wanted to do was just reduce the amount that we would spend on raises, and many faculty and many staff and virtually all administrators said, let's just not have any raises this year in order to spare layoffs. And so we did that. I've taken a step back on my compensation, but I haven't asked other people to do that yet for two reasons. One is, I don't think it's necessary right this second. Secondly, it took a long time for the level of compensation for the staff and faculty here to get up to just the median of the peer group. It's at the median right now. Depending on exactly what everybody else does next year, it may fall a little bit, it may not fall much because most places are not giving much in the way of raises. But it's not a sustainable solution to hit people's compensation for year after year after year and cutting like this. It just isn't sustainable because we'll begin to fall below market eventually, and then we will lose our ability to recruit and retain people. So I think that we have to make hard decisions. There will be some loss of staff jobs. There will be some shrinking of the faculty in order to have enough financial flexibility to really have excellence in what we do. And what that means in the short term, just to put it plainly, is that there'll be fewer people doing the same work that the university has. So one of the ways that I'm hoping we'll be able to keep morale up on campus is just being straightforward about it, people and honest, and saying we're all in this together, and showing, especially at the top of the university, where there's a lot of overhead, there's a lot of people doing things separate from teaching and doing research, that we're taking a step back in those expenses. So we've cut, my office staff has gone down from 5 to 4 positions. We're doing a lot of other things to shrink the footprint of the presidency by 10%, provost. And there'll be, I'm going to predict, Susan may want to comment, that throughout the administrative parts of the university, you'll see streamlining and efficiencies done. And all of that will be done to try to minimize the amount of pain and loss of jobs out in the units where the real work happens. But there will be something.
The one thing I might add is, and I'll do it from the perspective of my own division, that we have had a number of discussions about where we might reduce work time as a way of trying to get at. So are there some positions that were 12 months that could be 11 months? Or are there some offices that are so student-focused that wants exams, and we know it's not an office that has a lot of graduate student demand, we may shut down for a few days. Not unlike what we do in the dining units, that's already built in, but in other, what I might call administrative offices, and therefore people end up having 5 days less pay. But you do that in a number of places. There may be a way of doing that as opposed to a layoff of an entry-level position.
If I could go back to the uncommitted funds from the individual department, that's something that is really important in my department. We have a number of growers who give us money to do research, and so to have that not go toward research that they've requested is a hard thing for us to have to answer back to. Is there anything that the university is looking at in terms of reimbursing the departments later on?
I'm not promising that we can reimburse departments because I don't know what the future is going to bring, as was brought out earlier in the question. But I need to tell you how we've decided the areas and the amount of money. We've eliminated the things that are already committed. So if someone's given money is committed to a certain function, we're not touching those. We're eliminating money that's in the hands of individual faculty as part of startup packages and so on. Of course, we're not touching that stuff. We're looking at funds that are not being used for active operations right now. Now, someone could say, well, I was hoping or planning a year from now or 2 years from now to do this, to do that, to do a construction project, whatever it is. And honestly, Michelle, just being very straightforward about it, I'd rather take a chance on people going, finding some other money or some other way to do it than fire more people or then do something else that you can't easily step back from. And this community is a small community. And if we reduce the workforce too much, it's going to be hard on the community. It's going to be hard on those units, and some of those folks will move away from the community, and then it'll be hard to bring workforce back.
Right.
So I'm trying to do all these non-personnel things as much as humanly possible. But every one of them is painful. There's no doubt about it. Every one of them is painful. But we have taken off the table funds that are committed, taken off the table those that are in the hands of individual faculty, and taken off the table those that are being used right now for operating purposes. These are uncommitted fund balances, uncommitted, not being used right now.
Okay.
That doesn't mean it's not painful. It doesn't mean that people aren't upset about it. They are upset about it.
Right. Well,
but that's just unfortunately the way things are right now. And the tough thing about this is we have to project a plan that goes several years in order to finance the down period. But the actual how you actually manage the university is done on a much more frequent decision basis. So every 3 months, every 6 months, or depending on what the item is, you refresh your thinking about it by seeing what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of the most important questions right now is the question that you brought up, and that is how does our planning comport with the actual data in the markets? And the market, the Dow Jones went down another 250 points today, and it's lower yet. Remember when you hear about that stuff, remember that this university gets 11% of its earnings, or its operating funds from the down earnings, 11%. So that means if the market went down, if our endowment went down 50%, that's a 5.5% hit. It's not like Princeton with a 45% dependence, but it is 5.5%. And also, we get an additional 5 to 6% of our operating funds directly on gifts. The question that was brought up before, how are we doing on gifts right now? Eventually, that's also going to hurt us. We also get 8% from state funds, and that's down a little bit as well. And so it's many revenue streams down. Tuition's not down, and funding from the science agencies is not down. It may go up, because Cornell is very competitive, and the money in those agencies, and once again in the NEH, looks like it's going to be up. So it's a mixed bag. It's very hair-raising. It's very unsettling. And I'll make sure that I'm available to talk to people, go to meetings like this. If you ever decide, as leadership group, that you want to have a larger forum for grad students or something like that, just tell us and we'll figure out a way to make it happen. Just get the schedule right. I think the key thing is a lot of communication about it. Leave less to the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Even though things are tough now, it's better than people sort of wondering and imagining what it might be. So a lot of your people working on the issues.
Thank you.
wanted to bring up two resolutions. One that's going to be before this body next month that I wasn't able to put on the calendar, and one that's before this body later today. The first one is related to the budget somewhat, in that the last time you came to speak to us, I brought up the director position with the LGBT Resource Center.
Yes.
There have been subsequent meetings by the students group, and there has been a feeling that that really has been neglected. Even when I first came to this university, I felt that the LGBT resources were such that we only had enough to be reactive instead of proactive.
Yeah.
But there's been, my understanding is there's three administrative positions. One, the associate director housed in Willis Street Hall, that's been vacant for a year and a half. So for me, that's a cut from a year and a half, because that position hasn't been there. The director and the manager at the LGBT Resource Center, they haven't been hired. And so there's a lot of discussions going on. And I guess I just wanted to get your feedback, but also, you know, let you know that the community really feels like there's been a cut to the LGBT resources on campus for a while now, and that there is concerns about what's going to happen next.
Yep. But the hardest part really for me is not being intrusive on the individual areas that have to manage the budgetary situation. Certainly, even though it may not seem like it, it may just seem like empty rhetoric, that area is a priority at this university. It has been for a while, even though it may not have been funded adequately to what you people may need, right? Which is, it's your opinion that really matters in this regard. Once again, next week when we see what people are going to do with the budget situation that we handed out to them, we'll know, unless Susan has more information.
Well, sure. So it's actually in my unit. As you know, we did hire on a temporary basis for the director, and we had in the fall at least the assistant dean, because it had not been filled after last year. And it is an area that, as the dean of students is dealing with his budget cut, is trying to figure out what is the best way to continue to support the community. He's had a lot of conversation with a whole range of students and faculty and staff. I will teach tonight from what is submitted exactly how he's going to report doing it. Now, he has a budget cut that's going to result in a reduction in positions of his organization. There's just no question about that, given how big our budget cut is in the division. What Kent has tried to do within the Dean of Students as much as possible is to look at the vacancies that are existing and then begin to see how we can shift staff accordingly to limit the number of layoffs that we have, which is captured. I think he and I would both agree that the need for two FTEs of professional support at the university is what we need. Whether it will get funded or staffed in exactly the same way with an assistant dean and a director of an office, I think is still to be determined. But trying to figure out, are there ways that we can put together a reasonable plan with two FTEs, and then try to figure out what kind of office manager, office support has to be there. So we've heard it loud and clear, but I also know he's going to have to figure out where in the organization to take some cuts. And this will not just be the only one; there will be several. But we're very aware of what the issues are, and I encourage you to express your opinion.
In the meantime, regardless of how that works, whether both positions get funded or whatever, one thing that it would be really great for a leadership group like this to do is, as we move forward in the planning process, help us figure out innovative, creative ways of getting through the next 2-3 years. Because let's say, for example, that the two positions relevant to LGBTQ get funded. That would be great. There'll be something else that won't get funded. Or part of it gets done here and part of it. We're going to have a lot of places where we're not doing all the things that we want to be doing or even should be doing. And so we're really going to count on the community not only helping to identify priorities, which is a key important thing for a shared governance group to do, but helping us manage, even though it's our job to manage, helping us with good ideas. Today we heard a report in the meeting where the VPs get together once a week from that electronic suggestion box thing. There were almost 900 ideas that came through that. And some of them were ones that were not surprising and we had already thought about. Many of them were ones that I at least had not thought about. And so the community has come together in that one way to do it. Now we got to move on to a more vigorous planning process where we figure out how to maintain Cornell the way we want it to be during a time when there's just going to be too few resources. And so we'll do the best we can, unit by unit, for sure. And you know Susan is completely committed, and it's not just words, it's years and years and years of demonstration that she is. But still she's going to need your ideas. Still we're going to need you to help us figure out the best way to do this as a community overall. Because it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. So we'll know a lot more. The Monday the 2nd is when Kent Fox and I get those ideas. We're going to look at them together, and we're going to look at what the whole budget cut looks like across the university. And then a week later, we're going to either approve or disapprove, probably approve what people have sent in. And then people are going to know exactly what's going to happen for the year starting in July. And we'll be transparent, and we'll get that out on campus so people see in the aggregate what's going to happen. But whatever it is, I'm sure that we're going to need good ideas on how to support each other as a community during a time where there just isn't enough to go around. There wasn't enough to go around to begin with, and it's going to be worse now.
Second resolution, just for your consideration, and you don't necessarily have to comment because you will receive this, is it's very timely, this being Black History Month. We are going to entertain a resolution on recognizing MLK Day. We do realize that it takes planning, and so I think it's something that can be done, and that's why I'm proposing this to this body for consideration. If a resolution was passed by a previous assembly, so that we hope that it's given consideration.
I appreciate it.
We don't have much time, but Carly, I saw your hand first.
There's no forecast for more than 1 year on this, so we want to be very careful and do it a year at a time. I can't tell you. It's going to depend on the particular school. The usual answer in higher education is just to put tuition sky high and then bring in financial aid. We're trying to moderate the tuition increases and also bring in a lot of financial aid. So there is a group. First of all, there's money in the campaign aspirations for that. And recently, when we have worked with the dean specifically, including the medical school, I know it's not what you're talking about in this case, but including the medical school and vet law and all the other professional schools, we've had direct talks in the beginning of planning, not enough time to tell you what it is, about how to deal with this particular problem. And the dilemma that the deans have in each of the individual units is the same dilemma that the university has in the aggregate. And once again, I want to be very honest with you, and that is the demand for a Cornell education is huge. And so there's no lack of people who want to go to these schools. And so when you look strictly from a monetary point of view, you think, well, this is our biggest revenue stream, it's the most reliable revenue stream. Let's do what we can to use that revenue stream in a way that doesn't disadvantage the students. Then the other end of that, of course, is that we are disadvantaging the students in a non-inflationary environment by raising tuition. So we're well aware of this, and what we're doing right now is doing the best we can on the financial aid side and moderating the increases as much as possible. And the most of the moderation this year has been on the undergraduate side. The only thing that's happened on the graduate side is actually we have foresold for 1 year the decrease in tuition that was supposed to happen this year. So we haven't raised graduate tuition, but we haven't lowered it as we were planning to do. We have increased graduate stipend. We haven't helped the professional students in this particular set of maneuvers. So we're aware of it. The deans are sticking up for you and speaking up loudly about it, and it's going to be part of the planning process. So I wish I could give you a more concrete answer on something right now. But I can sneak your question real quick just to make sure you have
it. Yes. It's just on the drawdown of media concerns. This year, I believe, on the
It is true for this year. Next year we're going to do things differently because it's going to be based on a planning process that we're going to go through this year. And for good and understandable and traditional reasons, this school doesn't have a firm strategic plan. The whole university, many universities don't, I would say most don't, because the university is really a confederation, a conglomeration of individual units, professional, graduate, undergraduate, different schools. But at a time like this, if we don't come together and have some shared aspirations and goals, then all we're left to do is do this kind of broad, blunt instrument kind of thing that we're doing this year. And so the hope and intention of the provost is to make next year's budget planning, that is for the year that's July of 2010, be based more on a more sophisticated model that we're doing this year. Okay, it's good to see you guys. Now that I'm leaving, you can put that thing back on. Thanks a lot for helping us.
So we'll go ahead and continue with our meeting, but as President Thornton says, he would entertain another larger forum for graduate and professional students, so that's something that we should talk about in the future.
Yep.
So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Bye. Alright. Open forum, yes.
Coming Thursday at the vet school at 4:45 in Sherman Hall, and I'll tell you if they let her. But there is an event called One World, One Medicine, and it's an international food tasting. It's $5, all you can eat, come and taste different foods. All of the proceeds go to Cornell Companions, which is a vet school group that goes around nursing homes for their animals. And then also the Hacker International, which provides animals to the school.
So, Carly, you'll send an email? Great. Excellent. Okay. Anything else for open forum? Chase?
Dropout level 2 last Thursday was a flash. Saw a lot of you guys here. A lot of cross-pollination, scientists, students, everyone. The next day, next morning, the manager, John and myself, and Chanel, they got to be a great training.
That's great.
Good job.
Preston.
One quick update from the faculty senate. They did not end up passing the work to all the commissions due to a Roberts rule with procedural technicalities, where they're going to be taken up again next month.
And he's incorporated in our bylaws.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What was the question, Colin? They redid the resolution within that is circulated as 24 hours because of standard week, and it's written in the bylaws that they have to do within the week. It's not within your bylaws, this is a provision within your bylaws for suspension.
Wow, okay. So let us know when that next meeting is. That can be fun. All right, anything else for open forum? Seeing none, we'll move on to approval of the minutes. There are a few copies, but hopefully everybody had a chance to read them beforehand. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Or
so moved.
Do we have a second? Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes as is? Please raise your black ridge. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. How many people do we have?
Hey, do we have a are you guys in favor of approving the minutes?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Hey,
okay,
David, did you want to approve? I mean, you didn't.
Sure, I wasn't here. But.
Okay, but you could have. Okay. All right. 11 in favor. Any opposed? None opposed. One abstention. Minutes passed. Excellent. Okay. Executive update. Mario, do you want to go?
No update.
Okay. Yandra.
I love you guys.
All right. Excellent. The only thing that I'm going to say is please keep promoting graduate housing, on-campus housing. So Brenda and I and all sorts of other people are hitting you with advertisements. Just remember that even though you may not be interested in on-campus housing, or maybe you are, but even if you are not, please don't just like throw a message about it in your trash box. Send it on to your constituents, please. So this is a really important thing. Brenda and I have a meeting tomorrow. We're going to hopefully learn more about what their continued occupancy rates are. Who knows what we'll learn, but we're going to ask a lot of questions and hopefully with your help keep promoting it.
Okay. We sent the postcard out again. If you've already trashed it, it also went out to the DGSs and the GFAs. So we've gotten spammed on all of your listservs. Also went out to all the new, what are they, people who have been offered and accepted Cornell graduate and professional students for next year. Which the graduate school is right around 200 at this point, and it went out to the law students and the MBAs.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Then we will move on to committee updates. We'll start with Brian.
So, at the last core meeting, if you remember, we had representatives from CIC coming to that, the future of moving out of what mail is Google and Microsoft, another project student advocacy we've taken upon in working with them. If you remember, it's offered to graduate students to look at the publications and help with like the trial websites when they come available. Student advocacy has volunteered to assist with that.
Oh, great.
We met with GNAP and the insurance office, tried to save time. I was just quite up the results and sent it out as an email to the community.
Excellent.
Finally, the only other thing I do want to discuss tonight is Resolution R5, which I presented at the last meeting. Regarding charter changes and the working procedures during the Advocacy Committee. Following that meeting, it was agreed upon that that resolution would be incorporated into the charter resolution that you will see tonight. Therefore, I ask for a motion from the GPSA at this time for the following. That the GPSA acknowledge that student advocacy has complied with last year's resolution R8, and that we did provide a working procedure, and that we did recommend changes to the charter, even though our committee ourselves did not, that was not formally approved.
Okay, so Chair asks for a motion based on what Brian said. All in favor, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. 10 in favor. Any opposed? None opposed. One abstention. So motion passes. Thank you, Brian, for your work and for charter search. Yes.
Did we get any feedback on the resolution we passed regarding the mental health?
Yes. Regarding, sorry, what?
Regarding the mental health.
Oh.
That was part of my meeting with Chandler and Jeanette. She did not see the resolution, but she said she was going to talk to Tim Marshall, who was one of the recipients on that, and find out what was happening. Part of what, if I allow another minute.
Yeah.
What Sharon was thinking of was to sort of have a meeting with student advocacy, and groups already established on campus to look at graduate mental health and welfare, and sort of decide whether or not that committee that the resolution requested should be even formed. Upon response to that, I answered, yes, we can meet. You know, student advocacy can meet, but the resolution was for starting a new committee. And, you know, depending on the results of that meeting, whenever that will be, I think we should still try to press for a new committee. Because it's what they want to work with what's here now, and now it's not working. But then having just the committee established may not work. So they're still working on it, and
okay, so just a comment that I want to add, and it occurred to me in the conversation that we had with President Thornton. In the future, I think it's best if we write our resolutions mindful of the economic crisis and just being sure to put statements in there about ways to implement. That was one thing that he said in response to Mario's LGBT concern, is think of ways that we can implement based on the current economic situation. So I know that I've been in conversation with a number of you about resolutions to come up in March, so we might maybe
as a group with the others who are co-authoring the resolution, go back to the drawing table a little bit and think about some of those things and maybe revise resolutions, just to keep that in the back of your mind. So we'll go ahead and, if there are no other questions for Brian, move on to Kate.
Yay, hey. Can you bring up my...
You bet.
Okay, so currently not having that movie, we've got one coming up in March that we're finalizing tonight. But I just wanted to share a quick little preview with you guys. We've got Brad Ball, April 17th. Great. I met this morning with Kent Hubbell, a student, and he very warmly shared his happiness that we're hosting it over the street, and I just want to be supportive of this event and really can be. Very robust, very hardworking.
Okay, keep pushing that.
Today is becoming my friend. We've actually had to revise what we anticipate the sponsorship will be, and we also had to factor in, if anyone is any. I am not a member of the committee, and I'm an LMFA board of my friend, many friends, and come model. Mm-hmm. Try to make it work. So you have to trust us. really, given the overrun last year, which was pretty significant, and there were even issues that have been brought up, and we're going to be talking about it. The co-sponsorship is most likely not going to be repeated at the state level. Let's just let the business go, right? $13. We feel like it's a good line. An amazing event for that. Really realistically, too, which reflects the event cost and ticket price, we can probably be closer to 20. So we really still are. Feel like we're offering people a lot. And we're still planning to do a band and DJ. Don't want to cut that out. We don't want to cut out food or alcohol or anything. Nothing more. In terms of the ticket sales, we're going to be on 109 St. Paul and through Big Red Barn, and then probably at the April 6th for me, but we will not be doing, for example, if we're going to be at spot 40 and try to sell them to the fellow best students. That's not the model that we're going to use, given the issue that was created last year with the cash. So we have another meeting tonight, right after this, with Michigan. Many different sort of subcommittees, and everything from catering to design to security, making sure that we'll come up with fair bills and shields and parties with the Russian style or whatever. But it's really exciting. Lots of people are helping me with it. I really appreciate that. But please reach out to me or anyone on my team anytime if you want questions about how people are going or want to help. We sent out for GTSA info. A couple of requests for event night volunteers to be willing to work an hour or two at the picket table, standing on the road and show there, different types of event night volunteer positions. We'd like to try to get a couple more people to do that. So probably with Mario, I'll put up again another one to get some more details for your team and say, if you do for anyone who's interested in volunteering that night, it's a very, very small incentive.
Yay for the business student running. That's all I have to say.
I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be exciting. This may or may not reflect the inside of the Boomer Straight.
All right. Any questions here for Kate? All right. So then we will move on to Ben. So Ben is one of our core members from BEE, and he went to one of the public TCAT meetings, and he's going to report on that. So hand it over to Ben.
Okay. So the punchline is that TCAT, for the first time in 10 years, is reevaluating all their routes. So if you ride the bus, the route is probably changing. There are only 8 routes, but they're not changing. The 8 routes that are unchanged are the 10, the 20, the 36, 37, 53, 67, 81, and 83. Every other route is taken. So
yeah.
TCAT is being really wonderful and proactive about soliciting input and feedback. They hire consultants that are really kind of streamlined and do all sorts of good things, but they really want community involvement. So if you ride the bus, if you know people who ride the bus, they should all go to the TCAT website, which is tcatbus.com. And if you scroll down in the center column, there's an update thing, and there's a survey to fill out. So you should look at the new route maps and give them feedback. I think although the public meetings are over, they're still soliciting input, and they've been really responsive and really proactive, so everybody should have input.
Survey and draft recommendation.
At the meeting today, we're also talking about the survey possibly being taken offline here in the next week or two. So if the survey is closed, send them an email directly. One of the things that they emphasized at the meeting was to send them any comments, things that you liked about the changes and things that you didn't like about the changes in writing so that they have something in paper.
My impression is that this has been an ongoing process for quite a while and it's getting to be pretty late in the game. So urgency would be emphasized.
Did they mention at the meeting how much feedback they have received?
I didn't hear at the meeting, but through news reports and other places, my impression is quite a bit. I live on West Hill, and I know our community newsletter has been having discussion about it nonstop for the last few months.
Thank you.
So, in fact, our two TAC Transportation Advisory Committee reps, graduate student reps, one of them was not able to go to the meeting that they had on Friday. The other was able to, and he called me today. So this was after I had corresponded with you over email. But he just wanted to pass on what he had learned. And I mean, basically, Bennett said everything that he also said. They had a TCAT rep come to the TAC meeting. He said, basically, the route changes that they're talking about, though, many of the TCAT routes are circular. And what they're doing to change many of those routes is just going out and back. So while there are changes happening, he says that he feels pretty confident that most of the new routes will still service areas where many graduate and professional students work.
I've definitely heard more positive feedback than negative. I mean, there's some winners and losers, but it doesn't seem like huge things. And most people, if they're currently served by a bus, they're probably within walking distance of where they currently be served by a bus. But it's worth looking at the route map and seeing it.
And he also said that TCAT is listening to these suggestions. So please get on. If this could affect you, if you take the bus, get and look at the recommendations and post your comments if you have any. Okay? Any other questions?
So we asked a specific question. I went to the last public meeting. So they're looking to have the final route done with times and everything, because right now they're just talking about generalities, what the route's going to do by the end of April, early May-ish. So my bet would be end of May in all reality. And then implement them for the fall academic year, because everything around here, it's easier to transition if they start them August 1st and get a whole new group of people. But in all honesty, they're making the map much easier to read. And weekend routes and weekday routes, it's very good, actually.
Okay, being mindful of time, I'm going to cut off discussion there, but if anybody has questions, send your net ID.
BDH32.
And also just get on the website, I think is probably the best bet. Okay, so we are likely going to go over, but we'll just kind of keep going, and then we'll entertain a motion later when maybe we know better how much time we're going to need. So, moving on to new business, R7. I'm going to hand that over to Gary.
Yeah, so I hope you've seen this resolution. That it basically just says that the Student Assembly passed a resolution calling for a halt to the registration of new student organizations within the SBAO. That this resolution did not take into account that grad students who also have to register there. Because there is no formal distinction between grad and undergrad groups, I mean, there is nothing, because we cannot say like, oh, we have, you know, grad students, etc. So in this resolution, you just see that groups which have more than 40% grads is still being on the register, and that's pretty much all there is to this. And you see it's post-functured by Ryan Adam, the SA president, and as far as I understand, the SA will have a similar resolution on the first day. So I think this would be a good one.
Okay, so do I have a motion to approve Resolution 7?
Could we just change the font style of the fifth whereas clause to the same font style as the rest?
We can definitely do that.
So moved.
Okay, so that amendment, in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 in favor. Any opposed? None. One abstention. Okay. Done. Any other amendments or a motion to approve?
I move to approve R7.
Okay. Those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 in favor. One opposed. One abstention. R7 passes. Thank you. All right. Mario.
I'm not going to read it because it was sent out and I mentioned it before. It's essentially asking the university in its future planning to take into consideration making MLK a non-instructional day. That's really it. It was passed in the past. This assembly also passed a similar resolution in the past. It's egregious. It's 2 years in a row that we start, well, or not 2 years. At some point.
The
essay. Thank you. I'm sorry. And so, unless you have any questions, I'd like to make a motion to support the past resolution 7.
8.
Yes. Oh, and one other quick thing. I did make, I apologize. I did take some friendly amendments to MLK is not the 19th. It's every third Monday in January. So I changed that. Thank you for the feedback, Brian.
Wait, so that that resolution, Mario, is not the same one that I had before. So I need to manually enter those. For example, the title and the number is not correct.
Okay.
So I need to know manually what those are.
I emailed it to you. That's
I know, but okay. That was not the updated version.
Okay. Is this the right one?
The one that I sent you over email is the one that we are considering, and the friendly amendments that Brian has suggested. So I need to know what those are.
So replace every January 19th with third Monday in January.
Correct.
Okay. I'm just going to write this down for now. Third Monday in January?
Yes.
Okay. Any other friendly amendments? Or was that it? Okay, so I will do that. Consider that done. And with that,
motion,
are there any other amendments or a motion to approve?
Motion to approve RA with the change to make it to Monday.
Yes. A second? Okay, all in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 in favor. Any opposed? And abstention? 2. Okay, motion barely passes. So, now, I said something earlier about how our meeting may go long, and realizing that there are only 12 of us here, so if two people leave, then we can't vote. Or we have to have quorum of 10 people. So be mindful of that, please. I'm not asking you to stay if you have other things that you have to get to. But, essentially, we're not voting, though.
We're not voting tonight.
Okay.
I would ask that my resolution, my changes be voted on tonight.
Okay. Well, so we get, who has the leaders?
I have a meeting at 7, but we can have
7. Okay. So, can I have a motion to change the agenda so that we look at the SB bylaws now?
So moved.
And a second. Okay, in favor, just say aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? All right, so, Nighthawk, I'm handing it to you.
Okay, so I sent something out a little over a week ago on the email. Hopefully, I've had a chance to peruse it to some extent. this is new funding guidelines for the Finance Commission. There are three substantial, they're completely different. So comparing them to the old bylaws, unless you read every single word of every section, subsection, whatever, it's going to be different. But it's basically the same thing with three substantive changes. The substantive changes are, one, we have raised some funding maximums. So this doesn't necessarily mean that any group is getting more money. It just means that the group can apply for a higher amount for various things. So, for example, now groups can apply for to house a speaker at $130 per night in terms of lodging. They can apply for up to $130 a night to spend on lodging for speakers. We raised that because it was previously $100 per night. That was below the federal maximum, federal reimbursement rate. And this is more in line with current federal reimbursement rates, as is the $42 a day for food for speakers if an organization is bringing in a speaker. It used to be $30 a day. And we're also, the other funding maximum that we raised was new groups could apply for $150 of social funding, $150 of other funding. Previously, and now we're saying that they can apply for $150 of social funding and up to $300 in the other funding category. The reason we're saying that is because a lot of groups that were new, under the rules, they can apply for only that $300 in the annual budget, but they can apply for as much as they want in what's called a special project request. And so groups who are applying for the maximum $300 in their annual budget, but then they apply for $1,500 in special project request because there's no maximum. This way, we're trying to give them a more legitimate, because we're not necessarily giving them any more money. It's just saying that they can apply for more money the first time that a group applies to funding. And as a proviso to everything that I'm saying here, all these changes were approved by the Funding Policy Committee, which is the standing committee of GPFA that looks at these what used to be the bylaws of the Finance Commission. And all these changes have been approved, that I'm about to say, with supervisors that I'll mention in just a bit. So those raising the funding maximums was the first substantive change. The second substantive change to what used to be the Finance Commission bylaws is that we added a category of funding called field organization funding. And hopefully you've read some of the details of that in the document, but field organization funding is basically a new funding category that provides funding for organizations that represent academic fields. So if you are, in the field of physics, it would be the Physics Graduate Student Association, or something like that. And so the third substantive change is that there are different funding categories that you can apply for funding for from the Finance Commission. They used to be program, club sport, publication, and now there's program, club sport, publication, and field. And previously, any group could only apply for funding in one of those categories. Now we're suggesting that a group can apply for funding across those categories, can apply for funding in more than one of those categories. So those are the substantive changes. The proviso that I mentioned that the Funding Policy Commission wanted us to mention is that we didn't come to a clear determination on two things. One was whether field organizations should have to observe the same restrictions as all other organizations. Some of the people on the Funding Policy Committee thought that field organizations should have fewer restrictions than are imposed on all student organizations at this time. Yes.
So to make it clear, there are some restrictions that field groups are not subject to, but there is a list of things which the FC doesn't fund as a matter of principle. That, for example, is postage, phone calls, those types of things. So some people want to make exceptions for museum visits, etc.
Which are listed as a matter of principle that the FBI didn't fund for, but some people suggested that a field should be exempted. Field organizations should be exempted from that. You had neither of us did agree with that, but some people on the committee, we didn't come to a decision. The other thing that the Funding Policy Committee, the one other thing on all these bylaw changes that they didn't come to determination on was some of the members of the Funding Policy Committee thought that field organizations should be able to, if they have a publication, like if they're putting together a journal, that they should be able to fund an online publication
and it doesn't matter the principle. One of the things that the bylaws, the current bylaws, do not fund is web hosting or web design. So that would conflict with the current bylaws, and but some people still thought that that discussion should be given. And I have not incorporated either of those changes into the current document that I have proposal in front of you because we did not come to a consensus on those. But if any of you feel really strong about one of those changes should be made, we can discuss that as soon as long. So I guess I'd like to take questions in whatever time we have for this.
Mark, one thing is that I thought that one of the reasons why this new funding type of category came up was because we were essentially closing our eyes or not paying attention to that one rule that means that when you have an event that gets sponsorship, it's open to everyone, and that's really not realistic for field organizations. So in putting this document together, unless I missed it, I think that original reason why this came to be has kind of been put on by the wayside. I'm not saying that, from my understanding, I'm hoping that at some point it's dealt with.
No, so maybe I can answer that immediately.
Sure.
That was what I was trying to suggest. There is this notion that things have to be open to everyone. It's true for these other four categories. It does not apply for you.
Oh, great. Thank you.
So it's just under what you find under Article 5, specifically expenditure is ineligible. In this particular thing, there's no exemption for you. But for the other, the way we presented it at the last meeting is still the way
it is. Yes. But the wording we have related to your concern, Mario, is in Section 6, subpoint E, subpoint 7, which says events funded by field funding and not relying on any other GPS AFC funding can, at the organization's discretion, be open exclusively to members of that field.
Thank you.
Which is a differentiation from any other sort of funding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, guys, I apologize for bringing this up at this meeting, but I know organizations spelled with an S is the European. Do we want to confuse Americans by putting an S in there, or spell it with a Z?
I don't think it's confusing, but if this body feels strongly about it, we can change. It's consistent throughout the whole document. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have changed it.
What's it? The charter just said this document, and we'll have to change R9 to change some of the references based on any naming changes that happen.
Sorry, I'm not sure I followed.
Like funding policy committee, there are references in here to the funding policy committee.
Yeah.
We'll deal with it.
That's fine. I'm asking that potentially we would vote on this tonight, and if we vote on it tonight, it would be before the charter changes, but I think it would be fine to update it after the charter changes.
And the reason to vote on it tonight, sorry, Brian, would be that we are going to start the application process soon so that organizations know have a paved ground for what they build their budget on.
The budget materials for next year will come out before the next assembly. Will be issued by the Office of Assembly before the next assembly.
Brian, the question of the deal being represented on the board. So what happens in the case of, let's take microbiology for example.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm here and microbiology does not put another member into the board, is microbiology considered to be represented?
Based on my reading of the charter, it makes some charge you can make considered, but it would be that microbiology is not represented because I think the wording is members who are then assembly seated members do not count as members from their own field. I think that's the exact wording.
Okay.
That members do not.
Well, they don't count in terms of the allocation of seats to a field.
Right, but they still count as a representative from that specific area.
From the area, but not the field.
No, he's the core representative from microbiology.
I don't think that's the wording that are.
I don't read into the charter, but I think it's not considered to be a draft. It's still retained position of the representative, but that's what you don't want to change.
I think that's a good.
I looked at that word in this morning.
Sorry, so based on this, is there some way we can clarify that possibly in here as well, so someone later down the line doesn't think, all because I'm here and Mike Fields does not necessarily have another draft, we're still safe.
Or can you clarify it so that you don't have to have it? Or my department kind of or you can write it like for your assembly in the school person.
Well, I like the rule, I just think we need to clarify that.
That's a simple clarification for that would be either have a core member represented or an assembly member from their field.
So where are we particularly looking at in the document?
So we are looking at section
What is your suggestion, Brad?
I don't have a particular way, but something to clarify an assembly member within a field when they consider.
I think it's rather, to me it seems clear that all the speech is kind of like him, right? So if it says that it doesn't say at least one, it's like all of them, and that's just like, and I think it's rather clear. And on the other hand, I think it would be a question to the charter review committee to make sure that it's understood where these people actually belong to them. So I would be feeling that it might not be the best way to try to do this here, but rather than the charter.
I think this needs to be clarified.
I think this needs to be clarified here.
As it's currently written, you would have to fill all the seats. So if you're a field with over 100 members, you would have to have two seats filled. If you are an organization with an assembly representative, you'd have to have someone else that's on the assembly.
More comments on this, Mario. Please indicate if you have a comment.
And I'm just going to mention that we discussed this briefly in looking at the charter, and I see that. There was a lot that they were taking into consideration. So that's something that actually I'm going to suggest taking care of. So I don't know that we should wait on that, but I did want to point that out, that there is a confusion about once you're an assembly member, are you on the core and are you not? And in my reading of the charter, sometimes it has language that says something fuzzy that you are both the core and assembly, and sometimes you're not. So I'm going to suggest something when we consider that. I don't know if that helps.
Amy had another comment, then Brian.
Before this gets passed, we need to fix something that Brian even pointed out. You have two section sixes in this document. You have an appeal labeled as six, and you have funding categories labeled as six.
Okay, but that's not a problem. It's a friendly amendment to renumber 6-7, the second 6-7, and then renumber everything after it.
That appeals now become 7 and everything after it is numbered according to
7. You can do that now.
Okay.
Michelle already can take care of it later. I really don't care about
it. Just as a...
Yeah, no friends.
I think we need time.
Yeah.
So I guess I would just request an addition.
Yeah.
So we start off and fill all the seats assigned that they are going to be as a council representative as defined by whether we have a charter or a final.
UPSA charter, actually.
As outlined in the charter.
Article.
As outlined in the charter or defined by the charter?
As defined. As defined by the charter.
And then the first sentence is defined by the charter.
Yes.
Do you want the article out of the charter?
It doesn't matter. I would consider friendly to add at the end of the first sentence, section 6, subsection E, subsection 4, end of the first sentence, as defined by the GTFA chart. Thank you. Consider friendly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So, can you clarify, so if I'm an assembly member, I'm a member of that school, does that still mean I would need somebody else to also be on the board?
Hmm.
Yeah.
but even sort of like bigger, if we then, on this 40 now, that if we then go and so try to increase the number of seats, so like the vet school, because we're a larger area, we would add more seats, we then have to make sure each of those seats are filled on the floor as well.
An organization, if they don't meet this core representation requirement, can still apply for the exact funding that it applies for today. It's just that it wouldn't be eligible through. If it was a field organization, would not be able to eligible to apply for whatever the additional thing is, the additional funding.
So, can you just clarify? Because right now the charter says that we have to only 70% fill the core seats.
As it states in the charter, elected GPSA members retain their positions in the Council of Representatives, but do not count as representatives from their individual field or school. An additional representative from the individual school of an elected GPSA member shall be sought according to the procedures outlined in Article 4 to ensure the individual school's needs are being served.
Mario, are you... Your hand was first.
Yeah, well, and I apologize for bringing this up, but they're so interrelated that I think that needs to be updated so that it says you're not a core member for the purposes of counting, you know, but you are a core. You're part of the core.
Are we talking about the charter?
Yes, because okay. It's directly related to that.
It is, unfortunately.
Then the question is about elections, too.
Yeah, in all honesty, without this charter having been passed yet and being asked to vote on the SC guidelines, I'd rather see there be a definition that the field either have a member from CORE or either have a member representing on the CORE or from the assembly.
Not including member, but just
like
somebody watching the process, it seems like there's ambiguity written into the item 4 at the moment, and that the GPSA Executive Vice President has discretion about whether to inform hiring committees or not. So it could just be that the Executive Vice President doesn't inform the finance committee, and so that ambiguity can be taken advantage of to bypass this issue and tell something else to tell them.
Sure.
But then also, there is an amendment process built into this guideline, so you could pass it as is, and now you can pass it.
I thought you guys were going to use this for the current funding system.
Right.
That starts in a couple of weeks.
Right.
But the funds will only, so just because an organization wouldn't have a representative right now, wouldn't be a problem for the organization to apply for that funding. Right. So that would only start to begin.
Brian,
I think we didn't even clarify this specifically in the document. We're kind of reading it to see exactly what they have to do. So I like Amy's suggestion. I think that's a good wording. It's very specific.
The point of when the funding policy made this change about the when we discussed this about the field representation was that all of the seats would be filled. I mean, it wasn't an accident that we used that word, that wording of saying that, you know, they have representation, they wouldn't have representation. The argument of the fund policy was that all of the seats would be filled. So it would be a change. It wouldn't be a clarification. It would be a change from what's written.
I think any change that we make to that definition, it really impacts the charter. So for that being said, I'm all for approving what you have now. And we tackle this issue when the charter comes up. So with that being said, well, that's what I'm saying. So I make a motion to approve.
I mean...
There's a logistic issue with that problem, because this charter won't be passed by the time they need to specify.
But that's what we're working with now. I'm not going to... In any case,
we can deal with the charter that we have.
So in the charter that we have, that's how it's... I mean, that's one of the things. So that wording we didn't change. And so somebody who has... So... I really believe that to have an assembly member in there for CORE, because you take people like Bryan Field, that's a small field, they have two people on the assembly. To ask them to send yet another person to these meetings is actually redundant and
Excuse me, I completely forgot about Community and Rural Development that has one member in their field. So I would entertain it as a friendly amendment to change it to having at least one member on the GPSA or the board.
Okay.
Change four to fill all the assigned seats to the field on the GPSA Council of Representatives to fill at least one seat. Fill at least one seat assigned to that field on the GPSA Council of Representatives or
either one seat
or
necessity?
Or necessity, that's fine. At least one seat assigned to that field
on the GPSA Council of Representatives
or the I'd like to make a motion to move to the previous question, close debate on this issue.
Second, all in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed? None. Abstentions? One. Okay, go to previous question of voting on the bylaws.
So what we would be doing here is replacing the current Finance Commission Appendix A and Appendix B with the document in front of you.
So clarification, bylaws, AFC have procedures and funding guidelines. Funding guidelines are Appendix A and B. So we could be replacing the funding guidelines
with what's called the funding.
Do I have a motion to approve the funding guidelines? And second by Kate, all in favor? 7, 8, 9, 10. In favor? Opposed? Abstention? 2. Passed. All right, thanks for your work, guys.
Thanks, folks.
And so we will move to a discussion. We have about 8 minutes by my watch. How much time do you think you need?
We can move quick, so maybe 10 minutes over.
Can we motion to extend the meeting to 7:15?
Second.
No, I was in.
In favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Okay. All right. Okay.
Does anybody need paper copies of these? I have several paper copies sitting up here.
Yeah.
Okay, being mindful of time, I am going to limit comments, questions to a minute each and responses to a minute each. And I have a stopwatch. So, yes. Oh, yeah.
In essence, what it's saying here is that the ad hoc charter review committee was charged with reviewing the charter to see where inconsistencies, redundancies, and problems within the charter exist. And it was charged to clarify these and present the final assigned document to GPSA for approval. And so this resolution is just outlining kind of what the committee was doing, and then it's just formally bringing forth the document. I don't think we need to spend much time discussing it. The only thing is that the specific tier 4 bonds are laid out in such a way that if the charter fails, we can continue to go through and pass specific documents that are related to the charter, as Europe has some funding documents related to it. So then we just move into the presentation.
I will have some comments on R9. Some are just typos, but others are actual comments.
Okay.
On the document itself, so I don't know if you want me to bring those up now.
Just at the end. We just want to get this whole thing presented.
Okay.
just for our charter reasons, we need to present it now in order to be able to vote on it within the next business meeting.
Yes.
Okay, and so just the PowerPoint, please.
Oh, yep, sorry.
And we will try and present updates to you as we finish them, because this is a pretty massive undertaking, and we're going cross-eyed, and we need your help.
All right, and so this is a presentation of the Charter and Bylaw Review by the Ad Hoc Charter Review Committee. And so the purpose of the committee, as I described before, was just to basically redraft the charter in a more appropriate form. And the scope was the charter bylaws and related documents had to be delivered by the latest, the second to last business year. And so just an overview of what we're going through. We're going to go through a charter overview, make a change to the charter, the bylaws overview, and then external funding documents, and then a brief question and answer session. And so this is what the charter layout actually looks like now. If you go through the articles, it starts off with establishments, then moves into the authority that GPSA has, the responsibility GPSA has with other assemblies and with the administration. The membership of the GPSA that is divided into the assembly and the council of representatives, the offices of GPSA and elections thereof, committees, procedures, the establishment bylaws, the establishment of the GPSA activity fee, which will be delegated into its own article, protection, and the charter and bylaw amendment. So if we go through, the first one is establishment. So the president of Cornell has the formation of the Graduate Professional Student Association. This is the first major change. We're proposing to change the name from the Graduate Professional Student Assembly to Association due to clarity within the document. And so it's divided into the GPSA Council of Representatives and the GPSA. And then if we go through the authority and responsibility of membership, originally Articles 2 and 3 were combined, so we actually just split them just because it's more a coherent way to actually read it. The major difference of these two sections is the setting of the language surrounding the GPSA activity fee, which was moved to a later article. And then also Article 4 clarifies the distinction and relationship between the Council of Representatives and the Assembly, maintaining the same spirit of the original document, which is actually kind of one of the issues that was brought up tonight. So moving forward, on the officer section, the GPSA University Assembly representative is no longer designated as an officer of the GPSA. It moved to a later section. And the majority of the remaining document was edited directly from the original charter. And then the committees themselves is now stripped down to a bare bones because most of the committee details are incorporated into the bylaws. The major difference is that the new committee that is formed is the Policy and Procedures Committee, Internal Policy of the IPPC. And this is responsible for the parliamentary procedure, the updating the charter and bylaws, and submitting a redraft bylaw at the beginning of each academic year. The reason for this is kind of like our internal parliamentarian to make sure everything is administrated correctly. The chairperson is offered first to the council of the assembly that we're going to a general election. There's a biannual review of the charter, so every 2 years there's going to just be a review of the charter. And this is when the actual committee itself is considered to be full. And when there is no review, it would be empty, so that the chairman is actually the only person actually on that committee. The only other change in the whole committee section really was the funding policy committee now becomes the appropriation policy committee for ease of reading.
And to also clarify between FD and FPC, because a lot of people during funding years tend to confuse these, especially outside organizations and people coming in.
And so then Article 7 and Article 8 are the procedures, establishment of bylaws and procedures. So the formal procedure for removing committee chairs by two-thirds vote of the assembly is added. This was something that needed to be added to the charter because it came up last year. The remaining article is edited from the original charter. And then also surprisingly, the GPSA retained the right from the original charter to construct bylaws, so we did not need to actually project that in here. We just have it in its own article. And then the establishment of the GPSA activity fee is really constrained by an external letter that was between the president of the GPSA and between the president of Cornell and the GPSA by itself. So the majority of the language has stayed the same. And it refers to two external funding documents that shall be attached to the GPSA charter and given the same precedent as the GPS charter as well as amendment rights. Protection is the same as the original charter. It's protecting the Cornell community. Charter amendments must be circulated 1 week prior to the vote. The bylaw amendments must be circulated 24 hours prior to the vote. So the bylaw crash course primarily maintains the specific operating details of the committee as gathered from the committee chairs. Bylaws may be suspended by two-thirds vote during a regularly scheduled business meeting. bylaw amendments are designed to be more flexible to allow quicker changes and less revision of the PPSA charter, and our hope is to have the bylaws expand while the charter continuously becomes more compact. And then this is the GPSA, one of the external funding documents, you can read the title there. It contains eligibility, petitioning, procedure, and obligations the organization must follow to in order to apply for and receive bylaw funding from the GPSA. There's one compromise that we should bring up is that for external organizations that are applying for bylaw funding, there's a stringency that applies to them that can be circumvented by the GPSA by a two-thirds vote, so they don't have to apply for a 15% petition.
But it must be done in the spring prior to this funding allocation. So if a group wanted to do this, say, something like flood insurance, this, Yaron and I bantered about this for a little while, but having an organization like Club Insurance, which is byline funded, and a university office administrates it, having it gather 15% of resources was not a efficient allocation of university funds. So allowing that group to come in and say that this really doesn't fit us, and you have to do that the spring before this group applies for funds.
And the spring thing is mentioned in the
document. Yes, that's mentioned in the document. This is kind of a compromise that Yaron and I came to in some respects. If you have better suggestions, then Yaron probably has some more suggestions for us for this. let us know, because we wanted this not to be able to be amended during a funding cycle.
Okay.
And then one point of clarification is that the appendix of this document serves as notification between the agreements that were established between the bylaw funded organization and the ACP. And then the byline allocation procedure is just that. So basically, it's a straightforward document that's compiled the byline procedures followed by the ACP and executive committee to start. So these are the members of the Ad Hoc Charter Review Committee. I'm going to give much thanks to them. I'm not going to read the names right now, just the title pages. And then also for the standing committee chair, specifically, yours could be applied a lot to the funding company. And the motions we can skip, these were just formalities for Robert Rules procedure that if somebody was going to try to challenge us at the next meeting, we could just refer back to these and just silence them. However, if we're a friendly group, I don't think we'll need them. So we can just be moving on to the question and answer. So if there's any questions or comments?
Here.
I wanted to make a short comment and clarification. So regarding the 15%, I think the idea is that there are some things we want to fund before we do that. Recognize that that's something else. However, this does not mean that this body does not have the right to deviate this requirement for a university or independent organization. This means, my understanding, that whatever we did last year or 2 years ago when Slope Day was getting funding with only 12% signatures, and I mean, it's a little embarrassing, that was a breach of the charter. And if that should ever happen again, if some organization would fail to reach 15% or 10%, then that should not happen again, and I hope it would be more obvious that it could happen.
You're in correct in this regard, and it's for the charter itself as what we're submitting on the charter, it specifically outlines how many for each organization type. This was just an alleviation for the uniqueness of some of the non-university organizations.
And the FT did look at the percentages for the petitions, because that was something that came up out of last year's discussion of 10, 12, 15% type of thing, what was realistic. And the according to Yaron, the FT committee, or FTC, excuse me, this is what we need. But the FPC did decide that they wanted to see the percentages stay the same. So we left that here in this document.
Yeah, fine.
I would just go back to the previous conversation that we had, and I really feel that assembly member, that language needs to be included, and we talked a little bit about it during our meeting, but that assembly should retain their seat on the core, and I think we do it by practice already in terms of.
It's written in there that it retains
but,
their seat on the core,
right,
but not their field gets another representative.
Right, but then the language is such, and even what you just showed me still makes me believe that that person is not considered a core member.
No, it's stated in the definition under assembly that they are still a member of the core, of when they're elected as assembly. That they are still a member of the court, but they are not the specific representative from their team.
Okay. I'll just read the language, but that's not what it says to me right now.
Read the two sections.
I will.
Yeah.
I think maybe if I can comment, I think that your concern is reflected also at a different point in the from the agreement statement, which says that the assembly members are expected to come to the bi-weekly meetings where four members are on the
No, I know.
I think there's no voting in the forum. I mean, I agree with you.
Well, there may be. There may be under this new.
We can look at the wording and see if there's a better way to clarify it. But I'm pretty certain it's defined under assembly and quorum that they do retain membership. Because that's one thing that I've in conversations with people in the committee that assembly members, their field should still continue to get another representative.
I mean, the current charter, I looked at the wording this morning and it wasn't changed. There wasn't anything like that the name sent out. And this was the wording in the current charter.
Yep.
Elected GPSA members retain their positions in the Council of Representatives, comma, but do not count as representatives from their individual field / school. So that's the current wording.
Yep.
Right.
I think the
same one. A question in practice has come up. Right now, do the professional schools send one core member to the core, or they send three each school?
No, it depends. I think Johnson & Law sends three, and Vet sends two.
Because it's stated in the charter that each should send three. That was in the old charter. We kept that in the current charter. Okay. And there was some banter back and forth about that. Making sure.
Well, then it's currently existing members. Because under section 4.2.B.2.1, it says one shall be from each of the professional schools along that
city. That's the assembly membership.
That's the council.
That's not the council. Yep. We've been through this document so many times in the past few weeks.
Is there any formal motion you're asking from us?
We're asking for discussion, feedback on the major changes. Because these are very significant changes. So the renaming to clarify assembly and core, so that, because the way the current charter was written, is most of the rules and regulations and it being an organization really only applied to this body here. And that this body was, even though that's not how we functioned in practice, and so a lot of the wording and changing of the wording reflects how we tend to function now in practice.
In terms of the changing of the name, so this body then will be the assembly.
This will be the assembly, the core will be the core, and the two combined are the GPSA.
And so there's such a thing as the office of assemblies, and that's consistent. The voting body and these other things, like the SA,
yep.
And the employee, the voting body are the assembly.
Except for the faculty senate.
Yeah, there's already precedent for the
And we like that staying the same so that it's still the GPSA. We're not talking about changing acronyms across campus. You can thank Carly for the suggestion.
The one thing that I noticed, is that I'm still seeing in some of these documents business meeting, and I think
I need to get that out, and it should be
assembly meeting.
Yeah. Yep.
So I
know that was attention
in bylaws, and I think. I admittedly only scanned the charter, but certainly saw it in the bylaws. So.
If you see that anywhere, we'll accept it as definitely friendly.
Yeah.
Okay. I figured as much. So, yeah.
Because there is no such thing as a business.
Right.
Yes.
So,
Yuri?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that I would want to come to the preamble, which I guess you've taken from maybe in large part from the other things, where I read this morning and said, okay, do you expect more extensive involvement in campus government and then also later at the end, that was the role of the GPSA? Then also at the end, it says something, foster an increased sense of community among all constituencies through shared responsibility. I think the wording of this preamble is important, and I'm missing something which says that what we should be doing is we should represent graduate theory. And I think it might be worth to put an extent to that, state the mission and not, and it's departing maybe a bit from this wording of governing, which I don't necessarily care too much about. But I think that's important, and I also do think it's important not only for the members of this body, but also because actually there is this important distinction that we only concern non-academic stuff. Like the academic part is not our difference, which I think needs to be clarified, where it needs to be in there, and sure like how it's here it is.
Can we charge you with drafting out the members of the
I did have to do it this time. Questions. Got it. So my lip.
Okay, Thomas?
I was just going to
So for those of you that didn't know, there was a proposal going around to change the numbers of the assembly and how they were allocated. We didn't include that in this particular proposal for a couple of reasons. Number one, we couldn't really reach an agreement via email. Number two, the Charter Committee has not met to discuss that to include this in this document. Most of what you see reflected here is directly from Charter Committee discussions. And so, we would actually like for that to be a completely separate discussion because of the contention surrounding it and the lack of consensus among them. Anything so far?
And we have a comment in the back?
I guess I just wanted to, as a non-voting member and be a representative of the day, just coming on in the fall, I guess the way that Mario and Chuck kind of deal with it. I'm wondering how much of what's happening here, I guess, is being coordinated from a larger group, because I have not really gotten any clarification of what my role is here, or I don't necessarily know how many people from our district are supposed to be on this, and a lot of decisions are being made that seems like it's going to affect funding for people that aren't having a voice. I'm just wondering how that's going to change.
So the way it's currently handled is that each field has at least one representative on the court. I know the executive vice president this year and last year have tried to contact different fields that didn't have a board member. And then every spring is when each field caucuses to elect their assembly members, which would be on this voting body. And in charter, the humanities have three voting members as it stands right now. And
there are no voting members.
Right, because if there aren't any humanities core representatives at that election meeting, which there was one, I think.
Not one.
There was there. But she couldn't.
Maybe.
But, so she wasn't. So she wasn't on. So there weren't any humanities representatives at that meeting. So those seats are automatically thrown open to at-large elections.
So, just to follow up, it is a failure of the system. We rely on kind of this chain of communication. And if anywhere in that chain is broken, then you're right. There could be lack of communication. We're doing our best. Last year, this year, with the help of the graduate school, I mean, the communication is at least getting to the GRS. With the help of Brenda, and if it's not getting beyond the GRS, I don't know. You're right. It's a failure of the system, but hopefully with these new funding guidelines where we're specifically saying your field can get money, bring somebody to the core, hopefully that'll alleviate or it help. You know, we'll still do the same things that we're doing to recruit, but hopefully we've got this other arm to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Do you have any suggestions? We have Roger Stable. That we can post the charter, et cetera, on the website.
Yeah. Well, in the resolution I've actually written, because I find it very cumbersome to have just the website version up there,
right.
The HTML.
And I've requested in this resolution that it be posted in PDF format.
I mean, before that.
Yeah.
You know, so people can actually input.
There are a few things we need to fix before I feel comfortable it going up, but
no,
definitely by the tour meeting, we can probably do that in March.
Okay.
I mean,
that
would be perfect, right?
Right.
Right. Seeing that we're basically beyond 7:15, are there any final questions, comments, realizing we're not voting tonight and this can be ongoing discussion either together or over email or whatever? Do I have a motion then to adjourn the meeting?
So moved. Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, I don't think there's anybody here who's not approved. So adjourn and... meeting adjourned at 7:17.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.